So welcome everyone, thank you for coming tonight. Is there anybody who is here for the first time tonight? Oh, okay. So for those of you who are here for the first time, the format is, at least the weeks when I'm here, which is every other week, is first we have our sitting and walking meditation, and now we have our Dharma talk and discussion. And before I begin the formal talk, there's an opportunity for anyone new or old to ask any question. Oftentimes people may have questions about the practices that we've done here tonight, about mindfulness practice, sitting, walking practice, etc. But also, as importantly and even more importantly, many of us are seeking to apply the teachings and the practices of mindfulness, of Buddhism, to our daily lives, to affect healing and transformation. And that is often not easy or clear. So this is a good opportunity if there's anything not clear about how to apply the teachings in all the various real life situations that one is facing to remediate suffering and to create ease and well-being and goodness. Please feel free to ask it, don't be shy. So we'll begin. If anybody has any questions about the practice or practices, please ask your question now. And if you're thinking it, you have to ask it. That's the deal.
I've been listening to the talks the past retreat for about the faith life. And I'm just wondering if there's any meditations that go at cutting through or even just specific practices throughout the day other than just letting go of preferences, or because I wasn't there for the retreat, so I don't know if there were some pointed meditative techniques along with that.
So Brian's asking a question recently. We did a 7-day retreat in up in North Carolina at Southern Dharma Retreat Center, and the teachings were all from actually something we chant here when we do our chanting service, a famous verse song by the third Chinese Chan or Zen patriarch, Tsang Tsan, called "Trust in the Mind." And so you're asking, are there any specific meditations that were done at the retreat? I'd rather not go into that, but I'm happy to talk about you privately. But I think the point that you just made, is there anything other than letting go of all preferences? I can't think of a better practice, Brian, than letting go of all preferences. If you can do that successfully, you have accomplished much. That famous trust in mind versus on the faith mind, called many different names, by the third patriarch, begins with the famous line, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences, those who do not pick and choose. When everything is let go of, everything becomes clear and undisguised. I think that is the wonderful point. But please remember that when the third patriarch is talking about preferences, he's not just talking about breakfast cereals or bagel choices, or you know what I mean. It's really about everything. Because if you think about it, I mean, preferences is an interesting word, but really what he's saying is our true mind, our Buddha mind, our original mind has no preferences. It's just like we can say mindful awareness. It just reflects back whatever is appearing. But the choice to like this, to not like that, to want this, to not want that, that's all self-created, right? And that covers over this pure, pristine mind of ours. And so the third patriarch goes right to the heart of things, right? Like we know, life is difficult when we have lots of preferences, when we want it to be this way and not that way. When we want people to be this way and not that way. When we want people to say this and not that, and believe this and not that. You know what I mean? When our self is fully in control and is always putting out endless endless preferences. Again, not just about when we shop at Publix, you know, not hairstyle, but really just everything. That is the very source of a difficult life. And so he says, not really tongue-in-cheek, you know, the great way is not difficult. You know, many people think, oh, this Dharma way, this Buddha way, is very difficult, right? But it's really quite easy. But we just have to let go, right? And one of the main things we have to let go is let go of the self, the ego, the I, that always wants to impose its will on life. You know, and you know, the ego, the self, is on a great campaign based on control and manipulation, right? And all in service of what? Of its preferences. So the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. You may not be ready today, Brian, to give up all preferences, but you can begin to see how always having preferences, how that, and dividing up experience that way, causes you difficulty. And you can see in any area of your life where you're having great difficulty, it's because you're having strong preferences. Intensity is directly related to that attaching. And again, the word attachment and avoidance is big in Buddhism, because it's saying, you know, it's no big deal to have a preference if one's not attached to it. Right? So you can say, yeah, I mean, generally, I like this. Right? You know, generally I might say, yeah, it's nice to have to sit meditation in a quiet room, right? But what happens when it's noisy? If one's preferences is not attached to, then one goes, yeah, I'd like it that way, but this is fine. No big deal. Right? I can be at ease. I don't have to let things disturb me. So I can have a preference saying, oh, you know, if you have a choice, right? I'd like to have this kind of food and not that kind of food. Right? But it doesn't become a big deal. It doesn't become a source of suffering. It doesn't become a source of conflict between you and others when your preference is something you must have. So it's important to understand that. I mean, the third patriarch is not saying, you know, just be wishy-washy. Right? Oh, I have no preferences. Well, having no preferences can become a strong attachment. You want to be free. So, you know, you're free to say, yeah, I mean, I like this. I'd rather, yeah, I like this kind of food or those kind of food. Yeah, I'd rather people like me than dislike me, right? It's kind of normal, right? I'd rather things always to work for me and everybody I care about, right? And I'd rather not have things go poorly for myself and others, right? I mean, that's kind of normal. But it becomes problematic when we are attached to it. And when things are not going our way, we cannot move with ease. So the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. Just let go. And everything becomes clear and easy. That's good enough teaching for that. Everybody always wants a deeper teaching. There's got to be something deeper. It's actually all quite simple. As also the third patriarch, in later on in the verse, he says, the more you talk and think on this, the further from the truth you'll be. And for those of us who think we can get it by talking about it and thinking about it, that's a good reminder. It's really about living it, experiencing it. Good. Any other questions? Don't be shy. Yes.
I have a question about skillful means.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm in a current situation that involves some difficult people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing my best to sort of reflect on what needs to be said in my role and where, you know, what I can handle. And you've spoken before about knowing your limits and pulling back when, you know, I'm beyond my limits of skillfulness. But this is one of those situations where I can't pull out without telling someone they need to be out of my life completely. I'm not sure if that's the most skillful thing to do. It's certainly the most protective, self-preservation thing to do, but I'm trying to figure out how to handle it. I'm not sure the best way to know.
So if I understand, I'm doing this for the recorder, so I don't know if everybody heard, but I think the question you're asking is, in terms of action, Buddhism teaches to always come from a place of compassion, which means compassion meaning one wants to lessen suffering in whatever situation. That's kind of the modus operandi, that kind of the general intention. You know, we're not here to create more suffering for people if we don't have to, right? And if we would like to actually remediate it, right? Whatever. But in acting in a compassionate way, there are usually at least two major aspects. One is that our intervention, our action, be appropriate, which means we have an understanding of the situation, the person, the dynamics, developmental place of the person, you know, how I interact with a 10-year-old may be different how I interact with a 50-year-old, and how I interact in a situation at work with a colleague, and how I interact with my child, you know what I mean, or a friend, may be different, you know, because in the context of a situation, behavior, there's a certain appropriateness, which is very different in different situations and different. So the first thing is we want to be appropriate to the situation and understand the situation, the dynamics of the situation. And then the other thing, which you just mentioned, and the word in Buddhism is upaya, we want to be skillful, use skillful means, which means we want to be effective. Right, I mean, that's sort of in a way to say we want to be effective, skillful in our application of compassion and action. So Kate's saying, well, what if you have a situation where you're dealing with, at least in your mind, with someone who is difficult for you to be involved in, and it sounds like you're feeling you've reached the point where you don't really feel there's anything really skillful you can do to remediate it other than to kind of say, I cannot be involved with this person anymore. Right? As I'm hearing you right. So it sounds as if you maybe have a history of trying to be skillful and appropriate, and as many of us had, and you've come to the conclusion that all your attempts are ineffective. In no way is it remediating your suffering or their suffering or changing the dynamics of the situation, right? So we all know about that, right? Again, we want to remediate suffering. In this case, it could be your suffering. And for you to honestly say, at least who I am now and my skill and my, you know, I really do not have the capacity of changing or transforming this relationship into anything but a suffering relationship. And so to continue in it would only continue to create pain. For myself or other, or for both. And so at that point, to come to the conclusion that the best situation would be to kind of a separation or take a break or put up some boundaries is fine. I mean, this is life, isn't it? And you might have noticed, I'm sure everybody here, no matter whether you're in your 20s or in your 80s, this life is a mess. I mean, have you kind of noticed that? I mean, or it's messy, right? It's kind of messy. And a lot of people are kind of messy. right? And even though we may want to, you know, have the best intentions, things don't always work out the way we want, right? And you know, and even if they did last week, here we are 2 weeks later, and same old, same old. So, you know, if we are not going to stand outside of life, right? Like, life's a mess, get me out of here, right? And that's sort of the traditional movement of a small minority. People who go off and become monks or nuns, they go to a monastery, they go to a practice center, they move to the country, they isolate themselves, they go, this is a mess, I want no part of it. But most of us here are here in Tampa, obviously because we are in the mess, right? And so to be in the mess means we'll have to deal with the mess, which means we'll have to get a little messy. It won't be pure, it won't be clean, it won't be perfect, right? And so that's why my sense is always within the guidelines of what we're trying to do, you know, to lead compassionate, kind lives, to have our actions be appropriate and skillful with the people we're dealing with, we at the same time know the reality of the world, and we can't control everything, and we can't make everybody do what we want. We can't get everybody to shape up the way we'd like them all to shape up, right? And so therefore, to be in the world is to live in the world of what? Of compromise. You know, to me, always is, you know, I mean, what I can say personally is what I work under is you know, to do my best. Right? So we have, you know, we have the star that we're looking for, to act compassionately, to remediate suffering, to be kind. And all I can do in every action is what? I can do my best. How do you find out, whether your action was skillful and helpful? You only find out what? Afterwards. So you're either going to be a coward and be scared of acting, right, because you may not get it right, or else you're going to enter the world as it is, wanting to do better. And we learn. And a lot of times we learn by doing. The wonderful thing about life is, we act as if there's no second chance. But that's very rare, right? So we act, and if we are mindful and present, we see the effects of our actions. And then, you know, now we are free to act again or not act again. You know what I mean? Many people think, life is a series of separate actions. But it's not like that. Life is a series of actions and reactions to the reactions and actions. In other words, it's a process. Right? And to enter life courageously, willing to get one's hands dirty, weren't willing to, get into the mess and get messy, and to not, be a perfectionist, right? But to know that one will do one's best, and one will see the effects of one's actions, one will be present, and one can assess and evaluate afterwards. Whether it was helpful, was not helpful, achieve what I wanted, I didn't achieve what I want, and then, just like communication. communication is a process. You know, I say something, somebody hears what I say, I'm watching to see how they react. If I think they haven't heard me right or are taking it the wrong way, I can do what? I can say, sorry, that's not really what I meant. Can I try again? Right? And you just keep working it. And that's what makes life fun, interesting. See, you have no preferences. Right? A lot of times we have preferences, we want things to turn out a certain way. But things don't always turn out the way we want, because there's somebody else involved. Or a number of people involved. So, you know, that's good. So we just, you know, we just do what we do, they do what they do, then we do it, you know. And it's a process. And in the course of that process, of that relationship, you know, there is possibilities. So it could be in the situation you're dealing with it at this point, because of the toxicity of what's going on. I mean, that could all be. A year from now, it might be different. You might be different, they might be different, situation might be different. But I think there's nothing wrong with acknowledging that there are some situations, there are some people that are very toxic. Right? Toxic for who? Toxic for you. Right? And that's a willingness to be honest with yourself. Yeah? They're toxic for me. I can't handle this person. Right? I mean, they're just too negative for me, and it affects me. You know, I wish I was more developed, right? That I could be like a Buddha and, you know, have the power to, just in my presence, to transform them. And maybe one day that'll be true, Kate. But you might just acknowledge you're not there yet, right? And some people are just hard nuts. You know what I mean? They're just tough. What? A lot of people are very rigid and very strong in their in the way they are, and are very unwilling to look in any kind of insightful way into the situation, the relationship, their own actions. Right? There are many people who just don't go there, and you know, that can make it difficult. Right? Again. Sometimes in life, like work situations or some types of family situations, we don't have a lot of choice. So we do just have to kind of adjust totally and do our best in those situations. But there are many situations where there is some freedom of action in which, you know, we do have the capability of putting up a boundary. And that's fine. Any other questions about practice? Yes.
When you were speaking about preferences, how do you discern the difference, the subtle difference, which is not so subtle, between trying to avoid preferences and being indifferent?
Yeah, well, that's sort of what I was saying. It's not, to say you have no preference does not mean you're wishy-washy, or doesn't mean you're a stone or a rock, right? Or you're just so depressed, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? That, what's it called? Anhedonia, you know, just, the world is so blah to you. Right, it's not that. Okay, so, and I think, you know, one way you could know it is there is something in indifference in which there is a separation, where there is a kind of wall, a screen, right? And it is kind of total, you know, sort of a generic. So again, this is not the aim of practice. The aim of practice is not to become indifferent. You know, that's why we talk about not being attached, but we don't talk about being detached. Does that make sense? To be detached means I have, you know, I'm separate from, I'm detached from. Again, most of us what? We live in the world, right? We have jobs, we have relationships, we have friends, we have families, right? You know, and in all those relationships, there is a certain degree of attachment, right? We have to be attached, right? I mean, you have to show up for work. You have to be, if you're in a relationship, you have to be responsive to the other person. So there's obviously, in this life, there are certain things in our life that we are attached to. The question is, can we be attached in a way that allows movement, right? That it can allow unfolding, right? And that is not controlled by me, by the ego, by the self. So, you know, we're human beings. And you know, basic Buddhist psychology is what? That when a sense, an eye, an ear, a nose, a mouth, a tongue, you know, any of our sense organs make contact with a sense object, such as we see something, We hear something, we smell something, we taste something, we touch something. Immediately there is what? A felt response of positive pleasure, right? Negative aversion, or sort of neutral. That happens with every contact, right? I mean, without even, this is not even thinking, right? There are some smells, there's something that smells, and it appears pleasant to us. Other ones appear noxious to us, other ones we're indifferent. Same way with sights, right? So that kind of, as we go through life, right, there being kind of this immediate contact when we contact something through our senses, right, of being kind of drawn toward or being pushed away from or being neutral to, goes on all the time. That is just the nature of the human mind and body and senses. Where it becomes problematic is where we begin to what? Attach, create strong preferences, strong likes and dislikes. Right? That's where a general capacity to be in life, to enjoy some things, to not be drawn to other things, I mean, this is normal, right? I mean, somebody says to Alex, gee, there's a great heavy metal band playing this weekend, you know, I mean, they're, right? I mean, Alex may say what? You want to go? Right, and somebody might say, I mean, I don't know your preferences. Let's say somebody says, there's a beautiful concert of Beethoven and Bach at the Philharmonic. Would you like to go to that? And Alex may say what?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, okay. You know, but again, the freedom is, if this person, you know, for whatever reason had a lot of meaning, then they said, I really want you to come just one time and hear it. Alex can say, all right, yeah. I'll meet you at the forum, right? And the same way the person who's into heavy metal can come to hear your orchestra. So to have likes and dislikes is normal within, right, within the range where it does not cause difficulty, suffering. The suffering comes, we know, when we don't get what we want, or we get what we don't want, then we know it has gone beyond just a simple preference. You know, if we're always taking stands, no to certain things, and yes to other things. We obviously have a strong preference. Yeah, but it's not indifference, right? The object of practice is not to become a rock, right? I mean, or else we could all just have lobotomies or something, you know. But I mean, obviously the object of practice is not to be that way. Because again, you know, you look at the most public great teachers around, the Dalai Lama, Thich Nhat Hanh, and you know that when you encounter them or you listen to their talks or see them, that they're very alive. They laugh, they joke, right? They enjoy things, right? They enjoy nature, so they're not indifferent. Because we have senses. We see, we smell, we hear. And the capacity of having senses means that when we contact an object of the sense, there is immediately an immediate, you know, positive or negative or neutral response. And again, a lot of that is conditioned by culture and other things and personality. But when we just don't want it to get to the point where it becomes fixed, it's a fixation. I mean, obviously, we know that having a degree of happiness, you know, I mean, I think this is one of the great things about the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh, where he's very pointing practitioners, that this practice is not just a practice of kind of this indifferent kind of mindfulness, you know, that one is just kind of in this kind of disinterested, detached, meditative presence to everything, and there's no capacity for joy. or enjoyment. No, there are many things in this life to be enjoyed. I mean, why be a human being, right? If you can't enjoy things, right? Enjoy what? Enjoy everything. There's so much beauty in life and goodness in life and people, relationships, right? Friendship, good food, beautiful flowers, sky, clouds, right? Lots of wonderful things in life, music, which are to be enjoyed. I mean, Buddhism does not teach we're here to suffer, nor are we here to be indifferent. But we're here to stop doing the things that cause suffering to ourselves and others. Does that answer your question? Any other questions about practice? Yes.
It's not so much a question as a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
For his guidance between that conflict of being detached or attached, couldn't you just say maintaining a connection would help? Because if you have a connection with life, you're not detached from anything, but you're not attached to your specific preferences either. If you maintain a connection, you have a connection.
Yeah, I mean, so the young lady, what's your name?
Tiffany.
Tiffany is just saying, are we talking about connection? Yeah. And again, I would say you don't even have to maintain a connection. We already are connected. We already are connected. Because when you practice mindfulness, when you practice awareness, you realize that it is normal that we are connected to everything we experience. Right? When we look, we see. In that moment, if we are present, we are connected to whatever is appearing in our sight. Right? The sounds, immediate connection. So there is connection. These are just words. But yeah, and you know, when we say, you know, simplicity, we're talking about that there is just in that connection. Right? So, you know, mindfulness practice is really learning about connection. Right? So what do we do here today? We connect it. What do we connect? We connected that when we sit, we connected with the experience of sitting. We connected with the experience of breathing. We were connected to the experience of walking. See, because usually when we do these things, we're not connected, we're disconnected. Because when we're walking, we're thinking about something. We're thinking about where we're going, we're thinking about where we just were, or God knows what we're thinking about. So therefore, there is no connection to the physical body as it walks, nor is there any connection to what we're seeing. So we, you know, there is a sky. Let's say we're walking outdoors, right? There's a sky, there's clouds, there's people, there's flowers, there's bushes, right? And we, our eyes, if we let them, will connect with those experiences. The same way our ears are connected to sounds. So the practice of mindfulness is really, we could say, almost a practice of purification. We are purifying the senses so they can be clear. So the connection between life is just natural and spontaneous. You know, psychologically, there is a deep sense, people these days, people feel disconnected. Do you know? People feel separate from. Right? They don't feel connected to a community. They don't feel connected to people they work with. They don't feel connected to society. They often don't even feel connected to their own bodies or minds. They don't feel connected. People feel disconnected, separate. That's why many people feel lonely, even though they may be around people. People feel disconnected. So at a deep level, there is that kind of aloneness. that so many people experience. So even though, again, they may, you know, have friends and family and work and be around people all the time, deep inside they are disconnected from all that. And that's, again, because we are not present and engaged with life. And that's why in our tradition, you know, the practice is called the practice of engaged Buddhism. You know, many people, even in the Buddhist world, they'll tell you about their practice. You know, I have a practice, they say. And, you know, I do my practice in my practice room. People talk like this. They have practices and they do their practices. I do my practice, you know, like it's a thing that they do over here, and then there's life, and then there's my practice. You know, and people, you know, and some people have very, in Buddhism, have very elaborate practices. Lots of, you know, visualizations and recitations and all kinds of stuff. You know, it's quite elaborate, their practice. And they rate how they're doing on how well the practice is going. Right? And then there's life. Buddhism is about life. It's not about practice. And if we are practicing over here, it's because we want to be able to transform our life. What is life? You know what we do every day? I'm not talking down to you, but I just want to make sure we're clear, you know, defining terms. You know what life is? You know, when we wake up in the morning, we wake up to what? Our life. You know, and everything we do for the rest of the day till we go to sleep at night, that is our life. And so our practice of meditation, our practice of mindfulness, our practice of compassion, of loving kindness, of patience, of no preferences, all the various practices we do, we should be doing them where? In life. Right? With real people, you know. Many people love to do, you know, metta practice, you know, loving kindness practice. Again, don't take me wrong. But the practice of metta is not something you just do on the cushion. It's just not something you do when you end your meditation and generate these good thoughts and feelings of love and kindness to all people. No, practice of metta is something you do with people. Right? You know, like all the people in your life. That's where you practice metta. With your family, with your friends, with your colleagues, with the people who are driving next to you in the street, to the people you see in the store. Those are the people you're generating kindness to, friendliness to. It's not something abstract. I remember the first time I met Thich Nhat Hanh 40 years ago. And I was quite proud because I practiced in the Japanese Zen tradition and we sat in meditation many hours a day and all that. And I thought that was the practice, sitting meditation. And when I told him that, he was kind of... Kind of was very dismissive of that. He said, yeah, so what? He said, but, you know, he said, so let's say you sit in meditation 3 hours a day. You know, tell me about the other 15 hours of your day. Right? He said, you know, 3 hours is nothing compared to 15 hours. And you know what? He was right. So please, you know, when we think about the practice of meditation, the practice of mindfulness, the practice of Buddhism, the practice of a spiritual path, whatever path you're practicing, it should be something you are practicing all day. And it should be something that is related, engaged in all the activities of your life. And it should be bringing you what? Happiness. Should be bringing you calmness. It should be bringing you peace of mind. Not just when you're on the cushion. Not just when you're reading Dharma texts and listening to CDs and DVDs. That is not practice. Many people think because they read texts and they listen to talks that they're practicing. No. That's preparatory work. Right? Please understand that. Reading guidebooks is not the same as traveling. Is that clear? It's a very different experience. Again, you can read lots of guidebooks and know a lot about places, but it's all intellectual. You've never been there, you've never experienced it. When you've been there and experienced it, you don't need to read the book anymore, do you? And it'll be a lot more enjoyable. Right? So it's about practicing in life. Any more questions before we get to the talk? I wanted to do this one. Again, I am reading from this book on meditation. It's called The Mindful Art of Thich Nhat Hanh. It's a collection of his calligraphy from an exhibit that was put on in Hong Kong. Many people have heard me give these talks and have gone out to buy the book. You cannot buy the book. It is not for sale. Somebody gave it to me as a gift, and I guess they were selling it at his retreats last year, but it is not available commercially. So this one is called... Can you see it, Alex?
Yes.
It is called what?
Mindfulness is a Source of Happiness.
So this is his calligraphy, and he writes, mindfulness is a source of happiness. I would say it differently, and I mean no disrespect. Because mindfulness by itself has no coloration. Mindfulness is the ground of spiritual life. It is the ground of all meditative life. Mindfulness means I am present. Is that clear? To do anything successfully, we have to be present. We have to be in reality. We have to see, hear, smell, taste, touch, feel what is going on in the present. Mindfulness is learning to develop that capacity. Is that clear? But we can be mindful of beautiful things, and we can be mindful of so-called ugly things. We can be mindful of happy mind states, and we can be mindful of unhappy mind states, right? I can be aware, I am mindful that there is a joy in me. I can be mindful that there's anger in me. I can be mindful that there's peace in me. I can be mindful that there's worry in me. Can you see that? So mindful is a capacity of mind that is objective, that is clear, and allows us to be present to whatever is going on. You know, it is turning on the light in a dark room. Most of people's minds these days are dark. Dark meaning they're just covered because we have this endless conceptualization, endless stories, endless dramas, endless obsessions, endless narratives that are just endlessly going on in our mind that we often don't even see what's in front of us. Right? We don't relate to the people that we are around. Because either we are somewhere else, we're not present to them, or even when we're present to them, we're really present to our thoughts about them. Is that clear? So we want to develop this wonderful capacity to connect. And not with our thoughts. Our thoughts about reality are not reality. Right? Words in Zen are called pointers. They point to reality. But we have to look. So in mindfulness practice, if I say, I am aware that I am breathing in, right? If I'm only just saying the words, I'm just connecting to what? The words. But I'm not connecting to my breath. The practice is to connect to your breath. We use the words to point us in the right direction. Is that clear? So, if I want to learn how to walk in mindfulness, and my mind is just monkey mind, it's just all over the place, then to say to myself, stepping, 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 touching, right? That is pointing me in the direction of mindfulness. But it's still what? Words. So I want to be able to let the words point me to the experience of what it feels like to walk. Right? So if I say I am looking at Alex, let's say I have a mind where I'm just all over the place, right? And I want to learn, I am going to be present to everybody I talk to, 100%. Well, it's because I'm so used to thinking about other things, what I got to do next, or thinking about what they're saying to me, or thinking about the way he's dressed, or, you know, who knows, right? So I might have to say to myself, what? I am aware that I am speaking with Alex. That what? That points me in the right direction. But then I can let go of those words and just be engaged. If I drift off, I could use the words to bring me back. Right? I am washing the dishes. Again, it's not to focus on the words, but to point us into the experience. I am drinking my tea, I'm drinking my coffee, I'm tasting this, I'm looking at a flower. I'm looking at a child. I'm walking down the hall. I'm talking to somebody on the phone. Can I give that person 100% of my attention? That's the practice of mindfulness. Is that clear? So mindfulness is a capacity of mind to be present to what is going on right now. I'm lost in thought. A lot of times I say to people, they say, oh, it's such a busy mind, my mind's out of control. Well, just be mindful of it, right? I'm aware that I have a busy mind right now, and thoughts are going all over the, right? Because if you do that, there is a part of you that is holding that busy mind in mindfulness. When you hold something in mindfulness, you don't run off with it. You just see it for what it is. You can be sitting somewhere and everyone, you know, you can go to the mall and everybody is moving around very frenetically, shopping, 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 right? And you can just what? You can just be sitting on a bench. Right? Everybody can be moving around and you don't have to join them, do you? You can be mindful. You can be calm. So mindfulness is that capacity to be present, but to be objective. I am aware that I'm listening to this music. Oh, so let me listen. I am aware that I'm looking. I'm aware that I'm smelling. That allows us now to begin to connect. I am aware that I'm hearing you. It's all right. No, we like that. No, we like that. We can't control everything here.
It's because I condemned other people for it. It's why it's that.
It's all right. See, here we practice equanimity, so we like things like that to happen. Right. You know, I mean, because otherwise I could think, oh, I'm really such a peaceful person. But it could only be because I control everything. But then you come along and right in the middle of talk, you know, your cell phone goes off and I'm grateful to you. Because it's a test, you see? Let's say I got really annoyed. How dare she? Right? In a sacred space, in the middle of my talk, which is so important, you know, that stupid cell phone goes off. You know what I mean? You see? And I could blame what? I could blame the cell phone or you for disturbing my equanimity. But can you see how distorted that is? And how weak my practice would be if my equanimity is based on what's going on around me. Equanimity is what? It's a state of one's own mind. An equanimous mind is one's mind. It's the capacity of not being disturbed by the ups and downs in life. So I thank you. So yes, now everybody's getting in on the act. So I would say mindfulness is a source of happiness. I will... She really wants to test me.
Or myself.
It's okay. So I would say mindfulness can be a source or is a source of happiness when it is used in the way we're talking. Okay. When we develop, you see, because also with mindfulness, when we are present, there is now a little space. Right? A lot of times, you know, people are so tight these days. You know, so people are so tightly wound these days that they don't have a lot of space, so they're very reactive. Immediately get angry, immediately get sad, immediately get annoyed, immediately get worried. You know, people are just very tightly wound. There's no space, there's no spaciousness. So there's very little chance to do anything different. We just are always reacting to things because of our programming, right? Buddhism, meditation, the Buddhist path is really about transformation, really changing the way we respond to things, no longer responding from our conditioning, right? The way we've always done it, or been conditioned to do and think. But to do that, we need some space, right? We need to be able to see what's arising in me, you know? Whether it's an impulse, a desire, an emotion, a thought form. In the past, when there's no mindfulness, no presence, no awareness, no self-awareness, things arise and we just, you know, monkey see, monkey do. But with the practice of mindfulness, we now have the capacity of holding what's arising, right? A thought, a feeling, an impulse, whatever, and to name it, I'm aware what? I'm aware there's annoyance in me. I'm aware there's irritation. I'm aware there's jealousy in me. I'm aware there's hurt in me. You know, just that's mindfulness, right? We can name, we are present to what's arising. And if our mindfulness through the practice gets a little bigger, more open and spacious, we now have room around the thought and the feeling to do whatever we want. We can let it go because it's not something we want to cultivate anymore. Because we know it doesn't bring harmony or well-being or ease or, you know, so we can just let it go. Or we can replace it with something we think is more effective or more meaningful. Or there's lots of things we can do. Or we could kind of postpone. Right? I'm kind of not in a good place right now. I better keep my mouth closed. Right? See, therefore, we've reduced about 85% of the difficulty in your life that you create with others. Right? Maybe I... Right? You know, because I am, you know, whether you are mindful to what's arising to your own mind state or your mindfulness goes... Yeah, this person is, right? they're not in a good place. They're not in an open place. You know, it's probably best for me not to say anything now, for both our sake. Right? Mindfulness reveals it. If we're caught up in our own story and our own projections, we're all over the place. Right? But when there's clarity of mind, when there's mindfulness, again, it's not going to happen overnight. It's a mind state that you cultivate and you get better at. But when there is that reflective capacity in your life, that awareness capacity and spaciousness, then it's...
That's not mine.
It's a symptom, right?
Oh, good. That's good. But that's the world, right? We can't control everything. Things are always going on. And our commitment is what? Right? As, right, Kate? There's only one person in this world that you have any capacity of somewhat being in control of, and that's who? That's you. And even that's not an easy job, is it? Right? Because she's all over the place. Exactly. So, I mean, it's very humbling to when we realize that, and we go, yeah, you know, if I want peace of mind, if I want open-heartedness, right, then I have to what? Focus on who? On myself. Yeah. Watch myself. Be mindful of myself. Really get to know in mindfulness my thoughts, my feelings, my behavior, my actions. And let me decide myself which ones produce good, which ones cultivate, create value and goodness in my life, and which are meaningless, they don't. Or which are worse, they actually do the opposite. They sabotage that which I want to accomplish in life, or the way I want to be in life. And again, when you begin to see that all these mind states and all these things that you identify as you are not you, but are just thoughts, feelings, perceptions conditioned by past, then you see that they're all very workable. You have the capacity to change and transform, and it's not that big a deal. But you probably don't believe me. You probably think, yes, it is a big deal. You know why? Because we think we're big deals. And we think our stuff is big deal. And we think our issues are big deals. And we think our preferences are big deals. So we're all caught up in big dealism. They're not such big deals, are they? And how do we know they're not such big deals? Because they just come and go, right? They come and go, right? You can't even remember. There were probably things last week, last Thursday, that you were a little upset about. You can't even remember what they are now. Right? You have to really work at it, right, Jun? You can't even remember. And yet at the time, they seem what? Big deals. So many big deals, right? That we were concerned about last month, or a year ago, or 5 years ago, right? Big, big, big deals. And we can't even remember them now. There were people that, right? Toxic people in our lives is driving us crazy. And we haven't thought about them in years, right? And yet at one point they were, right? So we need to kind of also lighten up. Things are serious, but they're not all that serious. Our stuff is our stuff, but it's not that big a deal. Everybody's got stuff. Right? We think our stuff is special, don't we? But everybody's got stuff. Mindfulness is a source of happiness. So again, coming back to the sitting meditation, the walking meditation, the mindfulness of everyday life, right? The learning just to be present, you know, when you're cooking, when you're cleaning, when you're bathing, when you're with somebody, when you're walking, just to be present. And to be present to your emotions, but in an objective, mindful way. I am aware that there's worry in me. I'm aware that there's anger in me. I'm aware that there's hurt in me. Right? And you're just aware of it. And you can hold it, or you can take care of it, or you can let it go, or whatever. So mindfulness is a means for happiness for all of us. Are there any questions? So everybody's clear. Good. So please, during the coming week, cultivate mindfulness in your daily life. And really, when you think about your practice, think about your practice as your life. Don't think about your practice as something different than your life. There's no thing called mindfulness that is separate from experience. To be mindful is to be mindful of something, right? And so all day long we can be mindful of something, whatever we're experiencing. And see if mindfulness, the practice of mindfulness, the cultivation of mindfulness can be a source of happiness for you. Okay. And also give up all preferences. And then I think you'll have a good week. So we'll stop now.